It was Mooney, your source for commentary on all things movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And today we have in studio, special guest, friend of the show. What's up, brother? Ali. Say what's up to everybody, Ali.
Hello. How's everybody doing? I'm super nervous. Oh, God. This is nerve-wracking.
Oh, man. No,
excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Hell yeah, man. Welcome.
Happy to have you here, man.
Yeah,
thank
man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and as always, this show is recorded before a live studio ostrich. Wani B, what we got for today's show?
Today's show, we got yet another trailer trash section.
Yeah.
We go over the trailers for Rings of Power Season 2 and the Dune Prophecy trailers. Then today we're introducing a new section. We call it Ride or Die. Basically, it's our version of Buy or Sell. Do we ride with the news we're talking about, or does it deserve to die a miserable death?
Ooh,
I like it.
I like it too. Yes, do it.
Definitely, definitely. And finally, we're going to take a little bit of a different tack today. We're going to have a bit of a sports ball episode.
We've been invaded by damn sports ballers, Juan.
Talk about the NBA, talk about some of our favorite memories, some of the nostalgia for the game, then discuss the state of today's playoffs in the league in general. Finally, to tie it back to the movies and pop culture we know and love, we'll be discussing some of our favorite basketball movies and favorite basketball moments from popular media and the movies throughout the years.
I'm excited.
So, anyways, today we start with another trailer trash. First of all, we're going to talk about the Rings of Power Season 2 trailer. Basically, the trailer, it's a teaser trailer. It's just basically showing kind of the follow-up to Season 1, where you see Sauron, you see kind of the elves, the dwarves, the humans in various states of distress. You don't get too much of a look at any particular plot. We don't get too good look at what's going to be. It is a teaser trailer, after all. We do get a lot of cool scenes with...
Force power or something, right?
Yes. Sauron seems to have force powers.
Is that from the book?
Does he have magic? He does have magic in the book, in the movies. Yeah. I mean, that's how he created the ring, right?
Okay.
So he's a powerful magician. I don't know if magician is the right word for it, but wizard.
He's got moves.
Yeah, he's a very powerful being. We see a lot of cool stuff. We see a lot of our favorite characters from Season 1, the dwarves. Really cool shot of this underwater kind of Cthulhu-looking beast.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, so some good stuff. Definitely the production value staying high as usual. So what's your take on it, guys?
You want to go first, guest, Ali?
There was a blackout. Like, a black person at all, then. You can Lord tell, of the Rings, that surprised.
You can tell Lord of the Rings hasn't listened to all the episodes because we've heavily discussed this Rebet of Lego Elf.
They told all the
Negroes to go home, and they did. They stayed home this time around.
Like, they had one black elf, not the dark elf. They have actual dark elves, but not it's not that's the one black elf.
The Rebet of Lego Elf, as you eloquently put it.
But who is the main, who is the good guy in there? Who's the bad guy in there?
Ali, you didn't watch Season 1, right?
No, I didn't see it.
Kind of a recap of Season 1. It's basically supposed to be the story of how the Rings of Power, the three rings of the elves, came into being.
Yeah.
It follows basically the story of Galadriel, who was the...
Who was
the elven kind of witch... Queen.
She's very powerful.
Particularly in book one. So they show her as kind of youth. You know, she's supposed to still be thousands of years old and immortal being at this point, but they kind of show her as like a rebellious, hot-headed youth.
Yeah.
Just, you know, kind of the problem already. Season one, the writing was terrible.
I'm not familiar with the books, but was Galadriel never like a,
She was, from the beginning, one of the most powerful elves before they even came to Middle Earth, right? Before the elves arrived to Middle Earth. But that's the thing. It's already, you know, a being who's already thousands of years old. It is thousands of years before Lord of the Rings.
Right.
But the Galadriel we see in Lord of the Rings is this kind of wise, powerful witch, tempted by the power of the ring, tempted by...
Because her hair stood up.
Yeah, you know, she...
She was just like, I'll take it.
She sees herself on the level of Sauron, but just this kind of intense, powerful, wise being.
Yeah.
And instead, we get kind of a teenage, hothead, Dumb Galadriel.
Who's supposed to be a couple hundred years old or something, or what?
No, I mean, she's still thousands
of years old. She's still thousands of years old, but she's still a teenager.
Yeah, she acts like a teenager just because some writer thought it would be cool to have.
Okay, I see.
You know, like.
Just a kid version of Galadriel.
Girl boss. I'm not, you know, trying to be sexist. It's just dumb. It's just dumb that it doesn't fit who Galadriel we know to be from the rest of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I have a question. Like, if maybe it's just how they wrote it and executed, because I guess it could be interesting to see how, you know, she grew from being not all wise knowing. She kind of started off as being kind of petulant.
See, here's the thing:
you go
the point of the story where this is happening should have already been way past this.
She's
the already okay. had.
I got you.
Literally, like a brother die. She's been in battles with Sauron, with forces of evil. She's thousands of years old already when the book starts, or when the show starts.
Yeah,
right.
Because the show starts 2,000 years after these events.
The whole point of elves
was 2,000 years
is that they're so long lived. You know, they don't randomly have major personality changes, even in 1,000 years or two.
No.
Right, because they're already fully formed beings.
Right. Like after 100 years, you're good to go, right? Yeah,
they might be different. But again, they're not going to radically change personalities after 3,000 years just because you have another 1,000 years or so. Your perspective might have changed, but she's not recognizable. Elrond is. The Elrond they have in the show actually is recognizable. It's one of the best parts of the show. He also has a dwarven friend. It's a really cool friendship, and it's kind of a weird thing where both the elves and the dwarves are like, what are you doing? Why are you guys being friends? This is not something you should do. And then Elrond is kind of the guy who brought the fellowship together, he invited the dwarves. He has that kind of wisdom. So you see some of that here, some of that diplomacy, some of those skills. I thought he was one of the better characters. So anyway, it shows the story of basically Galadriel trying to find Sauron, who most of the elves and most other people think is dead by now.
Uh-huh.
She's literally been chasing him seemingly for decades, if not centuries. So the other elves are kind of telling her, hey, you know, Sauron hasn't been seen in centuries.
The first Dark Lord was the...
Yeah, it was more...
Morgoth,
maybe. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yes, he was Sauron's master, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then he... No, but this was focused on Sauron. And then, they do a bunch of stuff. Age. Do a lot of weird stuff. They have a discovery of Mithril, which we know from Lord of the Rings just to be a very cool metal.
Yeah,
right?
Cool metal, yeah.
But then they make it into this magical thing that's going to save the elves. Okay. Where it's there's never been referenced. It's just a really strong, cool metal. That's all it needed to be.
So, right? Question. So, in this season two, just from the trailer, are we to believe? I think we saw Sauron's his human form towards the end. Like, was that?
Yes, although he was dressed like an elf
form, or is he a human?
He was dressed like an elf.
Because I think he's trying to represent himself as an elf. I don't think it's a human.
No, he had the same face as the human version from season one.
So Sauron wasn't just some dude to begin with. He wasn't just some guy.
He might have been at some point, but by the time we're on the show, he's been alive a long time. He's a very powerful, dark being.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Have the rings been forged yet?
They are forged at the end of the season, and that's another part.
That's what happened in the end of the season?
Yes. The whole show is about how the rings are supposed to be created, the story of the creation of the rings. And the story, at least what we get from Lord of the Rings and other references, is that Sauron effectively tricked Celebrimbor into creating these rings in a way that he could then control it with his ring that he created.
That was always the main thing. But he wasn't ever successful. So he was just like, let's just go to war.
Right. But then Celebrimbor was literally the all-time elven smith, legendary. Sauron kind of tricked him into doing it. It's not like he needed Sauron's help to do it in the first place.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. But in this, in Rings of Power, they have one episode where Sauron, we don't know it's Sauron yet, where Sauron meets Celebrimbor, somehow teaches Celebrimbor basic metallurgy, just that you can mix metals and make them stronger, have different properties. Like, it's some, Celebrimbor acts like radical idea. It's literally like the kind of thing you accidentally discover when you melt copper and
just want to see it
copper and nickel.
Yeah, some DIY
literally cavemen accidentally figured that stuff out when they created bronze. This is like thousands of years ago.
Did the season feel long? The first season?
Yes. Did it feel long? The one thing I will say for it, the production values were incredible.
Yeah, that's the one thing I say too. You can see the money that was spent.
It's gorgeous.
But it's absolutely gorgeous. But the writing was trash. The
writing is trash. The sense of, you know how early Game of Thrones had a good sense of scale for the world?
Yes.
Where, okay, if you were traveling, it felt like you were traveling that distance, and it felt like the people were as far apart as they needed to be. You don't get that sense of scale and proper consideration here. A lot of stuff just happens. Yeah. A lot of characters are built up, and, you know.
Like WTF.
Yeah.
Okay.
So based on just the, because for me, from this teaser trailer, I thought it looked worlds better than what I, well, the only two episodes I saw of the last season, but, like, I saw, like, definitely a sense of danger. Definitely a sense of like there's a looming threat and it
force power.
Yeah, it felt like it didn't feel hollow like the other like the season one. Again, it's just a teaser, not even like a good representation of the season. But I liked what I saw in this, and I'm hoping they can take what was in this teaser and kind of translate that over to what season two is, which I think comes out August. Yeah, August 29th.
Here's my counterpoint to that. It would be that the if you just wanted to put a teaser of season one with cool, amazing looking moments, you could absolutely do
Yeah, of course.
You could absolutely do that. The problem with season one was it whether it looked amazing or not is that the writing sucked and
made
no
sense. Did they change the writers for season two?
I don't think so.
Do we know?
Let me go.
Try to look it up. But so, you know, a teaser trailer doesn't even give us that many story details. It doesn't really make clear what the plot is going to be. That definitely doesn't make it clear that the characters are somehow smarter and more intelligent now. You know, it doesn't.
That kind of sucks. That kind of.
My point is, you know, it's hard to get excited for a show based on a cool looking teaser when the problem with the show was that despite it looking cool, it was a terrible show because of the writers.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And it looks as though the writers is the same team. I think what gives me hope again. You know, I understand we've been burned a lot by stuff. I just burned by stuff in general in terms of in the Lord of the Rings verse with this stuff, not the Hobbit notwithstanding. But I think what's cool is that, again, it's Amazon MGM Studios. I think what they learned from the backlash, because it was pretty loud backlash to season one.
Oh, good. I didn't know that.
And people made their voices heard. And I think a lot of the times, especially a big studio like Amazon, like sometimes they just don't listen, or they learn the wrong lessons. I think from this teaser, again, just from the teaser, it looks like they might have learned the right lessons. One can hope so.
I hope so.
That's all I'm trying to say.
But unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, the teaser is not going to be able to show anything about the quality of the writing.
True.
For eight hours of a show.
Yeah, you're not going to get 8 hours from a teaser that gives no plot.
But the point of a teaser
no
is...
character,
but
no.
The point of a teaser is to get you excited for the show. That is the whole
right. The black emphasis. Goop looked pretty cool. Like, what was that black glue?
I don't know what that was.
And the tree going crazy.
Like the shot inside of the lake, that shot. They're really cool looking shots.
Again, really cool looking shots.
Yeah.
But the show's problem has never been cool looking shots.
Gotcha.
The writing.
Gotcha.
So I'll harp on that. There's nothing in this trailer that takes away from my sense of
sure.
Until I see that there's an actual good writing, I don't care about this show.
No, I feel you, but yeah. So like Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power season two is coming to Amazon starting August 29th with a 3-episode premiere. So yeah, we'll get that at the end of the summer.
Next on the docket, we got the trailer for Dune Prophecy.
Yes, Lord.
So this was a bit of a surprise.
Yes, surprised me this morning.
there was no indication that there was something in the works for this.
Oh.
Obviously, I mean, the first Dune was a hit, but the second Dune was...
the big one.
Very next level.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In terms of, because of the pandemic, because of a bunch of things. Frankly, I thought it was just a better film. The first one was good, but the second one had a sense of epicness that...
I think both movies have done a thing where it's really tough, honestly, in science fiction, which is to transport you to another world. When I watched Dune 1, even when I was at home, I watched Dune 1 in theaters, but even when I saw it at home and then seeing Dune 2 in theaters, you were on Arrakis. And
yes.
It's rare that you have a property that really kind of puts us into where the characters are. And Dune just, Denis Villeneuve just has such a great understanding of just the world, the characters and all that.
Right.
A lot of respect for Frank Herbert's work, but the way Denis Villeneuve world built had it open to have a show like Dune Prophecy, where we can go back 10,000 years in the past and see how the Bene Gesserit sisterhood started.
10,000 in the past is
It's the prequel.
Yeah, so, going into some of the details, it is a prequel show set 10,000 years into the past. Mm-hmm. Basically, it seems to be the initial formation of the Bene Gesserit, the space witches from the Dune movies.
Okay.
Space witches.
That's what they are, bro.
Spacey, yeah.
Kind of, it shows some of the similar themes that we're already used to seeing from Dune movies, right? Their obsession with prophecy, with control, with power, their willingness and ability to get into these positions using one, their particular type of space witch magic, and two, I mean, you know, they marry and seduce and get, you know, in with these people, have the children of these people that are in positions of power. And then, so they've kind of, there's even a line in the trailer where it's like, oh, we're playing God, something along, paraphrasing here. Like, we can't play God.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, you know, from the movies, that's what it seems like they're doing. It seems like they're this mysterious Illuminati type force that are influencing the events of the empire for their own purposes.
To bring about their own quote unquote messiah, it's really they want to bring that about.
Right.
Mark Strong is like the guy that I would go to. It's the only reason that I would even watch that. Because I love Mark Strong.
Yeah, he's only Mark Strong, and also was kind of the only recognizable person in this that I saw from the trailer.
Yeah.
Only big name.
Put him in anything. He's amazing. This looks awesome. It looks like the movie. Like the money's there. HBO Max,
the quality
still had them doing money to spend. So
quality, well, I doubt we'll see some of the sweeping shots. I mean, it's not Villeneuve, obviously. Yeah. I doubt we'll see some of the sweeping shots. I doubt we'll see the sandworms. It seems like more of a political thriller with some space magic mixed in.
Yeah, it definitely feels like Dune mixed with kind of like, I'm guessing it'll be kind of like what we see in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, some like, kind of political plotting, backstabbing.
Yeah, the stuff we love, stuff we came to love, but. With Dune, I'm loving this. I'm trying to see here if there's a there's nobody from the movies in this or not even any kind of mention to the movies. It's like a all on its own. It kind of reminds me of like Old Republic with Star Wars, where they kind of tell a story like many years in the past, but kind of like sets the groundwork for what we've seen. And I'm looking forward to this, guys. So I think it'll be on HBO Max in the fall of 2024.
The only thing I can say about the show is, like, I hope with shows like these, they don't try to set up a season after, and they'll just, like, try to tell their story for that season, essentially. It's 10,000 years in the past, so I guess they have the freedom to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
But, like, I hope it's not just going to be one of those shows that try to build for season two.
Well,
focus on being a good.
I'm not sure if I quite agree on that, because I thought House of the Dragon, did that very well. I feel like as long as you have a complete story
and some lore
that you want to tell, right? Yeah. I feel that I'm with you. If I don't want them to like come out to the end of season one, they realize it's pretty popular, so they kind of shoehorn in a season
baby
two.
Paul Atreides or some shit.
Yeah, with
the Watchmen season two, for example. Like everybody wants that. But
So you know,
they made like the perfect story, just like the first season of Watchmen.
There's a difference between House of the Dragon, where they have a clear vision for multiple seasons of the beginning and an end of the story that you need a certain amount of time to tell, versus, okay, this coming out and being like, oh, let's just make more Dune, just pop out season two, even though it makes no sense.
Right.
So
it's the new IP. Let's go all out.
Yeah.
Well, it's the new IP and basically the Hollywood, you could say. But you know,
it's the new hot IP on the streets right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm excited for it though. So far, the franchise has earned my interest.
Yeah. And Mark Strong, like I said.
Mark Strong is definitely a good selling point. All right. So today we're gonna treat the viewers with a new section today. We're calling it Ride or Die. All basically, it's a reskin, buy or sell. We talk about whether a news item or particular piece of content is worth riding with, or whether it just needs to die a quick death.
All right, so rapid fire here, guys. So up first, Daredevil: Born Again is the news. The new Marvel series is coming to Marvel Television under a new banner in March 2025. Do we buy or sell that?
I'm gonna kill it. I'm gonna die it.
Who's the actor in it?
It's the same actor, Charlie Cox.
Charlie Cox. Vincent D'Onofrio's coming back. Both
Kingpin.
So both Foggy and.
Are they coming back?
Yeah, I would ride. I'm interested because I've seen all of it and I was super invested. The only one that I didn't see from it was The Punisher. Because I even asked, like in the chat, like I think it was with Aaron. I still haven't seen The Punisher, but I've seen everything else around it, and I've seen, like, I miss those.
Those Defender shows.
Marvel Netflix. But the one that sucked was, which
Iron
one?
Fist. Iron Fist.
Yeah, that one was trash, dude.
The Defender show was really bad, too.
Yeah, the Defender show was really bad, too.
It was very disappointing.
Again, because the Iron Fist, dude, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, so I guess, so you kill it, so you die it, you write it.
I write it.
I'll write it. Whoa. I'm next up. So the show, Agatha All Along, coming September 2024 to Disney. This is going to be a continuation of Agatha from WandaVision. So her character is getting like a spinoff show.
Okay.
It had like four different title changes, but they finally have a new actual title. So it's coming this fall 2024. So do we ride it or die it, guys?
Look, I love Catherine Hahn, but I'm a die anything going with Disney right now until they show me that they can make quality television.
That's fair.
It's a minor character from a secondary TV show that they barely reference in what, 5 years now. It's 3 years. What about Yoli?
At this point, Spider-Man and basically the X-Men are the only ones that I'm alright with. The rest can die. I don't care about Marvel at all at this point.
All right, I'm gonna go against the grain. I'm gonna ride this. I'm a huge fan of Catherine Hahn. I think WandaVision is the best of the Marvel shows that they've done in this whole like let's put TV shows on Marvel.
Yeah.
It's a cool world. It's like I like what they're trying to do with it, and it has promise. It's gonna go into just Agatha just trying to read more into the Darkhold, and she has a lot of like villains and whatnot. So. I'm excited, but I'll write that. Next up, so Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. I'm coming summer 2026. This is going to be directed by the director of the Cruella movie with Emma Stone and Millie Alcock. She played young Rhaenyra in House of the Dragon. If you got to see that. So, yeah, it's coming out next summer. So, do you ride or die that? So, a year after Superman Legacy, we're going to get a Supergirl movie that next summer.
Oh, man. I'm going to give it an incomplete rate grade for now. I want to almost say ride because James Gunn's work has been exemplary so far.
Oh, is that who it is? It's James Gunn?
Yeah. Well, Gunn is in charge of the DCU.
He's like the Kevin Feige of DC.
Right, he is. Yeah. Right.
But he's also directing the first Superman movie himself. Yeah. And I'm not sure if he's directing that. No, he's not directing that Supergirl movie, right?
No, it's the director of Cruella.
Woman of Tomorrow is the thing that I got an issue with. But outside of that, I'm cool with like anything Superman,
Supergirl comic run like that.
Oh,
that
it's name. Called Woman of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's
a comic run. I don't know.
Then I say right because we'll see what the fuck it is. You know,
we don't even know.
I don't even know what it is. There isn't anything about
tentative
it.
Yet. Tentative ride.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. So Nick Cage, everybody's favorite crazy guy, is starring in a live action Spider Noir series based off of the animated character from the Spider Verse movies. So a live action version of that is coming to Amazon. So do you ride that or do you die that?
Give me more detail.
Right, 100%.
That's all we got. It's a live action
Spider Noir.
Yeah,
you remember U.S. Spider Verse?
I didn't watch the cartoon sequel. One. I don't watch the sequel.
The first one.
Yeah, I watched the first one.
The one with the black and white Spider Man.
Oh, that was Nick Cage. Oh, yeah. Right. So he's voicing it.
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
He's voicing it now.
Right.
You write it. How about you?
I'm gonna write that. 100%.
100%.
Anything with Nick Cage, I'll pretty much hop on.
We're all gonna hop on this one. So we'll write that. Okay, another one. So Roadhouse 2 has been greenlit. So Jake Gyllenhaal starred in the Roadhouse remake, directed by Doug Liman, and it was the most watched thing on Amazon Prime like in their history, and they greenlit a sequel. So
that's kind of funny. I would have never expected somehow Roadhouse.
Me neither.
Of all things,
Clubber was awesome in that movie.
I feel like I'm not gonna go back and watch the first one. I guess I ride with it.
Right.
You know, it already felt like they were kind of cashing in on a Roadhouse. Almost, I don't know if they really needed to keep going with it. I don't know how deep that world is.
Who knows?
Of bar bouncers and coolers and such. I don't see how deep that could get. But, it could be fun.
As far as me, like, with Jake usually picks, like, pretty good stuff. So, as far as I'm concerned, I would say Ride. What? I don't know what to expect from it, but, like, Jake usually picks good projects.
No, that's not a bad
take. I rarely ever see bad projects from Jake.
That's not a bad take.
I'm actually going to die this one. Not because I am a deep fan. I'm a huge fan of the original 89 version.
Pulling a Skip Bayless, with Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
Skip!
Skip! Hey, come on, Skip. I'm a huge fan of the original 89 version, but I think, the way it ended, I don't want to ruin it, but it ended. You could go somewhere, like, they had, like, some scenes or possibility, but I think, I don't blame Amazon for striking while the iron's hot. This, again, it's, like, their most watched thing ever, but
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I think
that's fucking dope.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing for they've been putting out content, but I think, you know, they should, I would have wanted them just, like, I don't know how
franchisable.
Right, that's the thing. Where could you go?
So. Because we've seen it. We've seen John Wick. The first one was more popular than people expected, so they started getting sequels greenlit. Right, there was clearly never an expectation that there was going to be a John Wick 2.
When the first one was made,
and so on and so forth. So I'm not saying it can't work.
That dog carried the movie, bro. Right?
Yes,
it did. I'm not saying it can't work, but it just seems like a goofy property. Right, Roadhouse seems like a non-serious property, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, the characters are all taking it seriously and all the drama's there, but you're sitting in the back laughing, like, what the hell are these people doing?
Yeah.
Right? And you know what I mean? Like lines like, I used to rape guys like you,
Yeah, it was definitely
like, that's the kind of line you can't listen to that line without laughing, but he's obviously saying it very seriously.
Right? Yeah.
It's like a very serious moment. It's like an unintentionally funny movie. I just don't know how franchisable that is.
That's fair.
Yeah, but that's it for Ride or Die, guys. Thanks for all that. So what we got next? Yeah.
Interesting new show. All right, so time for our basketball talk. Yes. First time we've really done sports analysis, sports talk on this show. I know it's not some of what y'all are used to, but hopefully we can keep it interesting for some of the nerdier folks.
Yeah, so I guess I'll open up the conversation then, like, because we're talking about NBA basketball. So, Ali, like, what got you into basketball? What was, like, a first early memory of?
2004, it was the Suns.
It was
either 04 or 05. It was when the Suns went up against the – first it was the Clippers, and they were down 3-1. And then they came all the way back up on them. Then it was the Lakers, the same thing, and then they won. I was just like, and I was a Steve Nash fan.
Oh, I love Steve Nash, dude. That's when I first got into basketball, for me.
Like, I always saw the games back when I was basically outside of the States with the Bulls and the Jordan games. But what really got me into basketball was Steve Nash and Stat and Sean Marion, the Matrix.
Oh. Great team.
Man. Yeah.
Joe Johnson.
Baja Bell. Yeah.
Joe Johnson briefly.
Joe Johnson briefly. Joe but that was, I had not seen him at all at that point because I think he left in 2003.
Yeah.
But in 04, 05, oh man, Steve Nash and Robert Horry smacked the crap out of Steve Nash. That shit was hilarious. But that's when I got really into basketball because, like, they just kept on coming back. And that first year, they didn't have Stoudemire, so, like, they just had a bunch of shooters
because he was injured.
They beat the Lakers. I was just like, oh, my God. And the Lakers didn't have anybody except Kobe, and Kobe was carrying them, but they still beat them. And then I think they went up against Dallas or the Spurs. I don't remember.
I think it went up against the Spurs.
It was one or the other. And, that's when I really got into basketball personally.
How about you,
super. Huh?
So for me, it was around 2009. It was actually when I went to college. I didn't used to watch too many sports back then, but, you know, I went to UT, and it's, you know, it's a big sports town, right?
Did you go when Durant was there?
No, like his a year after.
Okay. Year after. Oh shit, you missed
it. Wow. I think it was like a year. I think, or maybe 2 years. I think it was 2 years after.
Because he went to the NBA in 07. Yeah, because
year I really started watching basketball was his first year in OKC. So 1 year after he left Seattle.
Yeah.
After the Supersonics left Seattle.
Oh yeah, 2004.
Yeah. Right. sorry about that. So I still remember it was that team with Ron Artest, Yao, and T-Mac.
Oh, The Rock.
The Rockets.
Yeah, The Rockets. Yeah. They had Ray for Alston.
Yeah, Ray for Skip to My Lou.
And then they skipped to My Lou, and then they traded him. They traded him for Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
Which at the time looked weird.
Everyone got mad about that.
He had the biggest butt in the NBA. Everyone,
yeah, at the time it looked.
Like, Kyle Lowry got a fatty.
So for the folks who know now, Kyle Lowry at the time was not, you know, the Kyle Lowry know and love today, right? Yep. He was the guy who did not look like a future Hall of Famer.
No.
Not in future, like All Star, anything like that. I mean, I loved him. I love Kyle Lowry.
Man.
Big shout outs to that dude, even from day one when we got
him. He's still playing, right?
Yeah.
He looks 25 still.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on.
It's because of his butt.
Yeah.
Is it on the ass?
Because he got that baby face.
I figured.
He got that baby face. So that's when I started really getting into it. Just started watching games. It helped that the Rockets were relevant. So that was kind of
it was that Beat LA. That Beat LA.
That was that Beat LA team.
Was that before Scola? Was Scola on that team?
Scola was on that team. Battier was on that team.
Love Battier. Yep. My goodness.
Aaron Brooks, that was his breakout
T-Mac
year.
T-Mac kept on getting injured. Y'all kept on getting injured.
Yeah. T-Mac didn't really do shit that year, to be honest. No. But Ron Artest. Ron Artest and Shane Battier, honestly, those guys could even, like, those were the prototypical big, burly wings that could defend anybody.
Yep. Ron Artest occasionally hit a three, but Battier you can count on also hit a three, but also play some defense.
Artest had some moves. He was a decent scorer.
He could put some points up.
So that's kind of when I started getting into it. What about you, Cozy?
It was actually LeBron's first game, 2003. So I remember vividly, I was like, I rushed home because I remember I was watching SportsCenter like in sixth grade, like in the morning. And I remember rushing home to say, because I remember like they were talking about LeBron in the newspapers and like everyone saying, hey, this guy might be like the greatest thing ever. And I was like, wow, like just see him. Like I'd never seen anyone like bring their arm all the way back to slam. Like the tomahawk, like the whole tomahawk thing was amazing.
Never seen anything like it. Yeah,
I was mesmerized. And so, you know. I was like, okay, it's about to come on like 9 or whatever. I remember watching Chappelle's Show. I watched an episode of Chappelle's Show on Comedy Central. It finished, and I went over to watch LeBron play, and just seeing him, like, again, he was not, you know, he's a rookie. Rookies aren't going to be changing the game.
Yeah, it was against the Kings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorite all-time teams. But just seeing him, you could see the genesis of what was going to be LeBron. So I just loved seeing that. I'm a kid of the 90s. I did love Michael Jordan from all the commercials, Space Jam. But like LeBron was like really the first time I started paying attention. And also when I started knowing what the hell I was watching on TV, it was LeBron James. He was like my foray in. So he's my favorite player of all time. And I guess going into that, who are y'all's favorite players?
For me, it's definitely LeBron. Like I grew up with LeBron. Yeah.
LeBron, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
LeBron.
Yeah.
Nah, man. Like
punk ass LeBron.
I understand. LeBron.
That's Skip.
You know what I think? You know what I think it is? I think it's kind of it's a nature of the beast, but it's you see it now. LeBron was the first guy. He wasn't the first guy to leave a team to go to another team. That's part of basketball. People get traded. People leave. It's business.
Is that why Juan doesn't like him? But what doesn't Juan?
No, actually, I was an OG LeBron hater. Like I was the one guy hating on LeBron before he left to Miami.
Why? Curious. Well,
honestly, okay. Like now, it's easy to look back and be like, "Oh yeah, LeBron's greatest or second greatest of all basketball player of all time and all this stuff."
Yeah.
But back, especially when he started winning MVPs, because I started watching right around when he won his first MVP.
Yeah.
Okay. So right. 05.
09.
Okay.
It was 09.
Okay. 09?
Yeah. 09.
Wow. It was 08, 09. Yeah.
Okay.
It was 09 and then 10 to 9 and 10 when he won his
nine
first
and
10. Two
there you go, 9 and 10.
MVPs. Mm. Those first
two. Yeah, because 08 was Kobe. Yeah.
08 was Kobe when they lost to the Celtics in the finals. Yeah.
GG's. GG's.
Great game.
Yeah. Just because of Kobe. Bynum and Ariza got injured. But look, he was already being crowned basically
the
back to back MVP, best player in the world, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And frankly, he just wasn't at that point in time. Like he
didn't earn it, you think?
Here's the thing. There's certain players
the media loved them.
I mean, for good reason. Media loved for good him. Reason. He could talk. For he good could reason. Talk. But I mean, there are certain players and certain teams that are really good at running up the score and being overwhelming against bad, physically outmatched teams. Mm-hmm. Right? Dwight Howard was another good example of that. Mm-hmm. Right? Where dude just went up. It was so much bigger and faster than everybody else.
Oh, yeah. It was not fair.
He just literally just jumped over them and dunked over them and stuff.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he went up against somebody his size, his build, that, you know, you couldn't just jump over, he became...
Wasn't as skillful.
Like, he became much worse, much more quickly.
Yeah.
So basically, he was the kind of player, like, at that time, especially statistical analysis was starting to come into the NBA. But so you got a bunch of dudes who didn't really know basketball that well, just knew basketball analysis or data analysis. Mm-hmm. And so I started talking about, like, oh, okay, you know, like, average performances or, oh, they're running up the score against these teams. So, you know, greatest player, oh, MVP. And then, you know, again, come to find out in the playoffs, when they did have these players that could guard him and that they did go against the other elite teams, mm-hmm, that were just as skilled and they weren't physically overmatched and that didn't have little dudes guarding LeBron that had no hope of staying in front of him. Mm. You know, not that he was bad, but he just wasn't as good.
I understand that.
So, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was honestly pretty embarrassing in that one Celtics series before he left.
Before he went to Miami?
Before he went to Miami. He straight up quit at the end of that Celtics series.
That went to 6 games, I think. But yeah, they like, did. Yeah. I just remember his team being hot garbage in Cleveland.
Yeah, he was like the only guy besides Varejao.
Because I know, like, Shaq was on that team.
Varejao was there.
Pretty sure. Varejao was there, but it was Antoine Jameson was on that team. Antoine Jameson. I can't traded for the else. Wizards. I remember that.
Here's the thing.
But his team that was
a,
trash.
That was a substantially better supporting cast than that 2019 team he dragged to the finals.
19?
Yeah, that was when, with an injured Isaiah Thomas and...
But he had champions on his team.
Bro, I mean, yeah, he had champions, yeah, but like...
But like, was, the players, like, know what they're doing at that point.
Yeah, like, that, like, you can't, like, you can't wait.
But bro, it was a really bad team. They won like 45 games. They won like 45 games.
Okay, I see what you mean.
They were like a 3-seed. I mean, it was a really bad team.
Yeah, I just wouldn't...
Why did they make the finals? Because 2019 LeBron... was substantially better.
Way smarter.
Than
way
2009 smarter. LeBron. Maybe not more athletic.
His IQ was insane.
His skill set.
Yep.
Dude could not post up. He basically, LeBron relied on, he's a really good passer, but offensively,
on the three
just,
and the dunk.
He just needed to, he wasn't actually good at 3-point shooting. He just literally relied on being able to blow past people, either get a foul or just get a layup. He was incredible at layups. Yeah. He's a really good passer. But he was basically like a bigger Westbrook at that point in time.
Yeah.
Right. Honestly. Like, and I mean, I love Westbrook, so that's not even that big an insult. But like, my point is, you know, he got this hype. Like, and especially, I'm a big fan of like skillful play. Like, Kobe's probably my favorite player all the time.
So that's
or I like some of
Kyrie Irving.
Yeah. Right. I actually really like him in a way, but I hate him Kyrie. As a person.
Flat Earth.
But I mean, a lot of guys. Like, I love at that time. I love Pau Gasol. I love Dirk. I love that kind of mid range, like,
yeah,
turnaround, like Paul Pierce, Carmelo, that type of
Anthony
player.
Edwards.
Anthony Edwards is kind of closest today.
Yep.
To that kind of to that kind of play style. Or Devin Booker was another good one.
Booker.
Where he's clearly
I'm not
inspired.
A huge fan of Booker personally.
I actually really like him, but
yeah, I like Book. He's just kind of not playing to his potential because we know he's a superstar.
He's really good. Yeah. But the point is, I like those types of players. So it's just frustrating seeing that LeBron was just basically barreling over dudes that were overmatched, and that everybody was like, "Oh man, greatest player of all time."
Suck
it's
his
like,
dick.
It's like, all right. I'm not saying he's bad. Just come on, just tone it down a little bit. At least, like, wait for him to do something. And keep in mind, after that, after he went to Miami and didn't get that help, he immediately choked the championship away in that Dallas series.
But and I point to that series as a turning point because he was like never again. Because we saw he had no back down game. He had no down low in the paint game for a guy that's 6'9". It's kind of weird that you can't back down.
JJ Barea.
Yeah. Remember that? I will never forget.
Yeah,
that. That
he
was horrible.
Passed up
that was horrible.
A chance to back down JJ Barea because he was in his his mind had gotten fried.
Which one?
Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler had fucked up LeBron's game, and he did not know how to react to it.
Which one's worse? What's that?
And then he went to Olajuwon.
Yeah, Ben Simmons not being back down against what's that guy's name
for Atlanta? It was
Trae Young. Which one was worse? Ben Simmons not just eating Trae Young's lunch was, or LeBron?
Definitely LeBron. No, it was Simmons. Because after that. After that, Simmons was never the player. Simmons, the same player. Simmons, LeBron came back. Won a championship.
I will say, I'm just talking about
out of the league.
That specific moment, because I remember it vividly. LeBron getting the ball on the wing against JJ Barea, passing it up, and then the rest of his team clearly being like, "What the fuck are you doing?
Why would you do
like,
that?
You're 100% right." But however, whenever it comes to Simmons, it was a layup. Yeah. It was a layup. It wasn't even on the wing.
It was bad.
It wasn't a layup. It was just like, nah, pass.
You know what?
I will say that Simmons completely spiraled out after that, whereas LeBron took that as inspiration to get
there.
No, you can see the thing. You can clearly, like you said, you can clearly see the difference between 2012 LeBron and 2009 LeBron. You can't see it if you just look at the stats.
100%.
Actually, his best statistical series, I think ever, was that Orlando series he lost.
Yeah, 2009. Yeah.
Yeah, because Stan Orlando
had his number. They defended him so well. And again, I'm telling you, those two teams that he went to the conference finals for the East, they were not good. He was carrying them.
Yeah, they were not good, but it's not like that Orlando team was particularly great either.
Exactly. They weren't like
like they were going up against Kobe in the second round.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were bad teams, but keep in mind, the next year when he had LeBron, Wade, and Bosh, he still lost because he didn't have those skills, right?
Yeah.
My point is, 2019 LeBron beats that Orlando team.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, 100%.
All right, what are your favorite teams? Like, my favorite team is the 2004 Pistons, that won in 04. That's my favorite team in NBA history.
Elaborate more. What do you like about that team so much? Who's your favorite player from that team?
It's a team of just characters. You have both Wallaces, Rasheed and Ben. You have Tayshaun Prince. You had Chauncey Billups.
Ball don't lie.
They played small. They were small ball, but small tough ball. They're kind of like a part two to the Bad Boys of Detroit. Because the Pistons, they won back-to-back in the 89 and 90.
Yeah.
I wasn't alive when that happened, but I definitely got flashed. And just to see, like, Ben Wallace, he's 6'9", 6'8", a really, really small center, just shut down people. And it was against the Lakers of all teams. It's the Lakers. The Lakers are supposed to – they're the freaking Lakers. They just came off of – well, San Antonio won the year beforehand.
They had
won back-to-back before. So I just loved how no one really picked them. Everyone kind of, like, weirded out, like, wait, the freaking
– No, everybody was picking.
Yeah.
Didn't help that Karl Malone got injured that series, but the Pistons were, I think, had the Lakers number that year.
100%.
Yeah. I just loved the way they played and how they overcame it.
Would have been interesting if Karl Malone could have won his one ring if he had managed to play
Jordan
that series.
Jordan is gone. Let me get
it. I guess also just since being a Houstonian, just the 94-95 Rockets, Olajuwon is freaking Superman down here in Houston. We had Clyde the Glide, Kenny from TNT. Like everyone knows Kenny. Smith. Everyone knows Kenny. Kenny Smith from TNT.
According to him, he's a superstar. He was a role player.
Right. But Kenny Smith got the job. Then he'll come in and get in. But like, I love that 94-95 Rockets team. That I always ask the question:
reputation burnished by TV more than Kenny Smith. Nobody would remember whose ass was if it wasn't for that show.
100%.
So do y'all think though, if Jordan doesn't go to play baseball, the Bulls are the Bulls. Is that team beating the 94 Rockets? I always say no.
No.
I always say no. But I honestly don't think so,
in part because that was before they got Rodman. Rodman was still on the Spurs.
No, Rodman
was still on the Spurs.
No, he was still on the Spurs. Goodness.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you just went back to back to back. You're about to go one more? Nuh-uh. No way.
I see.
And also, the pressure, man.
I mean, honestly,
if anyone could do the pressure, it's him, though.
I don't necessarily.
Well, if he could, he wouldn't have retired. That's the thing, because he was done with basketball too.
I don't think it was the pressure. I think he was bored of it. Honestly,
I think he was bored. I think he's.
I think the reason that it was the pressure was because of his doc. Because I saw the doc, and he was under a lot of pressure. And he did say he was under a lot.
Yeah, not to say.
Well, I mean, the pressure was probably other stuff
for him. He was like done.
And then his dad, and then his dad died.
Yeah, his dad was murdered.
Again, this is all stuff that I know from doc. Like I don't.
Yeah. So. But
I always wondered that question, like what, like a big what if.
Here's the thing. The one thing I will say, okay, players were built different back then. It's not to say like I think the NBA is more skilled.
Definitely more skilled.
Actually, we're talking about. We can kind of save it a little bit, but you know, Jordan played like 82 games very often. You know, he didn't miss any playoff games. He was a true Iron Man in ways that we don't see nowadays.
Yeah, and like it's back when like because today technology and health is advanced. Back then, Jordan had to do that because there wasn't the concept of like taking care of like really really resting and like
the other being part was of your body wasn't like there. They didn't have to defend the three like they do now. The way that they have to cover the court now compared to back then.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. I mean, like if you see the game back then compared to now, I mean, like how. All 10 players are inside the three-point line compared to what they are now. You and, like, the amount of fast breaks they're doing now compared to back then. The game was slow back then. They would walk up the ball. Yeah. They would, like, waste all the time on the talk.
It's a couple things. Because, one, I mean, you had hand-checking back then. You can get away with a lot, like you know, a lot of stuff that were just barely even called as regular fouls.
For sure,
flagrant fouls back then.
For sure,
you look at all these players; they're all physically jacked, right?
Yep.
They're like very muscular, right? Super. Like you look at Dominique Wilkins, you look at Patrick Ewing, you look at the Admiral.
Oh yeah,
right.
Karl Malone,
like physical specimens.
Yeah.
Right, people don't look like that nowadays. I mean, but frankly, that kind of size, which you needed, because you were banging like on a given week, you could be playing against Dikembe, the Admiral, Patrick Ewing, and Shaq,
and they're all trying to kill you when you got in the paint.
You can't be Chet Holmgren.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd snap going up against those four guys in a row in a week.
Dude,
nowadays it's just Jokic and Embiid. Right, that's pretty much it.
No, 100%. But like the other thing was that they couldn't, because they pick on players now. Back then, they didn't used to pick on players. Players could take a break, like in the game, and not be involved in the play whatsoever. Where like side of the court was just to play. The other two or three players were just completely out of the play. They could just take a break for
the whole 2-man game. Yeah,
and they wouldn't get picked on at all. They were like, hey. It's Steph, different. Come here. I want you to defend me. You're the short guy here. Right. You defend me. I want to tire you out. They didn't do that.
Some of the rules, too, that were changed as far as that goes was that it became easier to play zone. I'm pretty sure zone was straight up
zone
illegal.
Zone was illegal. Zone was illegal until 93 or 94.
I didn't even realize
that. Couldn't have people kind of playing free safety. I mean, honestly, just the pick and roll type play we see today wasn't possible pretty much entirely because of hand checking.
No.
I mean that's partly because people
also
want
the 3-point shot, right?
The
spacing is
it's
huge.
A combination of things. Yeah. It's a combination of things, but you just didn't see guys like Nash. Like guys like Nash couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I honestly don't think they would have been able to survive the grand of an 82 game season being smacked around. Yeah, the way people are smacked around these days.
Honestly, a lot of white people played back then. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's like, a lot of those white people were like Steve Kerr types. You know, Larry Legend was...
Nash was stronger than Steve Kerr, though. Nash was even taller.
Yeah, Nash... I mean, I'm not comparing Nash and Steve Kerr.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm saying, but like if we are comparing...
But even Nash, like you can see the difference in Nash's career before and after they changed the hand-checking rules. Like when he was on Dallas, he was still a good player. He was still an all-star, but he only became an MVP when, you know... He got when with that D'Antoni with someone who saw the vision of surround this guy with 3-point shooters and jack up threes. And
he's also jack up threes because back then, I mean, compared to the threes that they take now, I mean, like whole teams would take 5 to 6 threes compared to now. I mean, even like even back then when Nash done threes, they didn't shoot that
you
many
know,
threes either.
Honestly, one of the big transformations was that at some point the NBA figured out how to train its players to take threes.
Yeah.
It's not that these players came in skilled. Look at someone like Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. Kawhi Leonard shot no threes in college.
No, he could shoot threes. He couldn't.
He could not shoot threes.
No. Once he got to Popovich, and then, Popovich was like, yo,
you it's not learn. Just him. Even you remember if you remember the Morris twins, yep, you remember Chris Bosh.
At Kansas, they did, but not as much as when they got to the league.
But so you're right. That's a
Lopez
short
brothers.
You're right.
But the Lopez brothers. Brooke Lopez was a down low, post up beast.
Now he's a 3-point.
He became a stretch five. He became a stretch five.
He shot
amazing.
0 threes the first like 5-10 years of his career.
Bosh? He won a championship off of that. Two of them because of that. No. Yeah, I see what you mean.
The Heatles don't win a championship if Bosh doesn't learn that 3-point shot.
He's one of my favorite players.
I love Bosh. Yeah. So, like, I guess now, like, with the playoffs in full swing, what do y'all think? Like, who's going to go all the way?
So, I honestly thought it was going to be Minnesota, but they've...
kind of wetting the bed right now.
They wet the bed a little bit. It's a couple things. Sometimes it's honestly a make-or-miss league. Like, Aaron Gordon went, like, 11 of 12 in Game 4 on several tough shots. The kind of shots he never makes. And then, you know, Karl Anthony Towns went, like, 3 of 12, you know. It's like, you know, you reverse those to their standard.
Yeah, you get hot.
You know, you reverse those to their standard averages. All of a sudden, it's Minnesota up 3-2, looking like they're about to close out the league. Even this last game, there was a big run there where it looked like Denver was dominating. But, you know, they were both getting wide open threes. It's just that Denver was making all their wide open threes, and Minnesota was missing all their wide open threes. So
they just look like different because Minnesota was giving Denver the business in Denver, and it looked like the series was over. Like a lot of pundits were like, "Hey, could Denver, dare I say, get swept?" And it's crazy to see like just the whole turnaround. Like it looked, Denver might just take
Denver. Essentially said, "Yo, like Ant is not going to beat us. It's the rest of you guys, and they're not doing it because they're forcing him to pass."
Didn't help that they lost Mike Conley for Game 5. And you can tell they don't have a backup for Mike Conley.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
It's not that Mike Conley is their best player. It's just that
he keeps them steady.
They can replace they have an easier time replacing Gobert than they do Mike Conley because they have nobody else. That's why Ant did so badly. Well, he was putting up like 40 a game this series and suddenly went like 3 for 13 or some terrible stuff. I mean, if he had his normal game, they win that game.
Yeah,
Nuggets. The Wolves win that game.
The other part is he hasn't seen a defense like this before. I feel like in the playoffs.
I mean, Ant was dominating. Again, he had to start
last year. He also lost against him too.
Yeah, right? But I mean, Denver was just a better team, and I mean, Ant was still pretty young. I mean, he put up.
This is his first time going deep into the playoffs and winning in the playoffs.
He put up. You know, it's only like his fourth year, man. I mean,
of course. Young. No. He's
but
fresh.
He put up like 47 points in Game 4. Was plus 5 in his minutes, and like they were like minus 18 in the minutes he sat.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, what do you do?
Yeah.
It was clearly Karl Anthony Towns not playing up to. And then without Mike Conley, you saw him do terrible. I honestly think he was just trying to force it, trying to start off the offense. They were just being like riding him up
Mike
and down
Conley
the court.
Mike Conley not being the recruit.
It kind of reminded me of what happened with Cleveland, because without Donovan Mitchell, you're saying, hey, Garland, just go and just be a beast. Which,
that series is probably over.
It's probably over. But Garland can give you, 20. Not all the time, but if he needs to, but he shouldn't have to.
You sent the text after Game 2, the Cavs won. They're just like, hey, do they have a chance? I was like, nope.
Yeah.
So who's been like underwhelming then during this whole playoff 2024? Because I'd say it's
underwhelming.
Like from round one or round two?
Well, I mean, most of the teams we didn't expect to be competitive. Probably, I guess, if you're looking at underwhelming, would be the Sixers.
I'd say the Suns. The Suns were the one where...
Actually, yes. The Suns are even worse.
If you asked anybody at the beginning of the year, a team with Kevin Durant, a team with Devin Booker, a team with Bradley Beal, a team with freaking... Well, what's his name? The guy from the Rockets that we sent over.
Bro, that's pretty much...
Should be Eric Gordon you're talking about.
Eric Gordon, thank you. But a team with that in your starting five, like, should do something. At least do something. Not
Here's
get
the thing.
Sweat, but do something.
They
Here's
needed
the thing.
A point guard. They needed a point
Here's
guard.
The thing. Not that
Bradley
Beal's
no point guard to you?
No.
They had Nurkic.
Thank you. He's not.
They had Nurkic.
I hate to say that.
They had Nurkic, I guess, but... That team barely had 5 competent players. The skill sets of those 3 guys, or 3 stars, are very duplicative, right? None of those 3 guys dominate the rim. Maybe Durant in his prime, but nowadays Durant does not dominate at the rim.
100% agree.
None of those guys are driving kick guys. I mean, they can do it, but that's not like their natural.
Their ISO players
tried, but Ant-Man told him no.
Look, even Bradley Beal, again, no. All three of those guys were good dribblers, good outside scorers, good shooters.
Booker's an exceptional dribbler and scorer.
Good ISO scorers, but none of those guys dominate at the rim. None of those guys are elite playmakers. Good, but not elite.
That's the main issue. For me, that was an issue.
It's those things. Like, you have other players. Okay, like, look at LeBron and AD. Right? Okay. That skill sets
complement each other.
Complement.
100%. Okay. I see right? what you mean. 100%.
There's other examples. Jokic and Murray.
I'd even
Jokic
say
Jokic and Jamal Murray.
Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid.
Yes.
Are beginning to.
That's another. I honestly think they would have made some real noise if Embiid wasn't injured.
Of course.
But he's always injured. So, I mean, at this point. Like it's like saying if the sky was red,
it'll be
you know what I mean.
100%.
They're my second most underwhelming team though. That Sixers team, guys. I wanted them.
I don't want to blame them, but at this point, Embiid has been injured in the playoffs every year.
It's tradition.
It's he plays. You got to give credit.
He would have got the MVP if he didn't get injured.
He was probably going to get the MVP, which is wild because he underwhelmed last year and everybody wanted to give him. But he was playing so well, it's like shit. I guess we have to give it to him.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think it would be the Suns. The Suns were the underwhelming team.
Yeah.
But I think it's their coach, and also they didn't have.
Who do y'all think is going to win? I think at this point, I thought honestly about Minnesota was going to win. I think
you're not going with Minnesota?
No, not anymore.
I think it's the Nuggets all the way.
I think it's
I don't think it's Boston.
I think it's the Celtics.
I think it's the Nuggets.
That's a collision course that we're all looking forward to. I think Boston just has answers for every
they don't have an answer for Jokic.
Jokic, yeah. But Jokic, if I'm boss, I'm like, hey, Jokic can do what he wants. Let's kill everybody else.
Bro, if you saw the game last night. Again, I think.
I know.
I honestly think the Wolves would have won last night if they had Conley.
Yeah, 100%.
I honestly think because.
Yeah, it was like a Nuggets. They lost like 10. Yeah.
Floor general.
It started getting bad at a certain point. But it only started getting bad because, again, they didn't have somebody that could settle. They didn't have somebody that could settle and put, not just timely shots, just somebody that could settle the pace.
And set the play.
Yep. Actual offense.
And execute. Yeah.
Execute. That was a huge, even though he's not the best, probably the fourth best player, but they have nobody that can replace him.
He's a team leader.
They have no backup for what Conley does.
No, they don't.
I got you. Well, hey, man. Ollie, we'll definitely bring you back on to talk when the finals is in full swing.
Yeah. Keep going with it. I do want to, real quick, before one thing too with the Wolves and kind of talking about how the NBA is today in general. Game two felt very nostalgic for me. Game two of the Wolves versus Nuggets.
Oh, that beatdown? Yeah.
Not only just because it was a 30-point win or anything, but the way the Wolves were playing defense and the way the refs were calling it. It felt reminiscent of, you know, those grit and grind.
Early 90s.
Grizzlies. It felt reminiscent
more
of
like
that.
Grizzlies. Not even the 90s. More
of
like
that,
the
of that Pistons. Sure. Well, more recent for me. That Pistons team. Mm-hmm. Some of those elite, or even that Heatles team, where they had size and athleticism at all the wing positions.
Yep.
Basically, you know, they weren't calling these little shove fouls. They weren't, frankly, they weren't calling some stuff that probably was just indisputable fouls, right?
It's like, wherever the refs are going to start at, like, they don't have consistency on that. And, like, that's the other thing. Like, players have talked about it multiple times now in a bunch of podcasts.
People complain about it.
They complain about how the refs just, like, take over the game. And, like, the NBA can control the game through them for sure.
They'll decide the game.
100%. And but that's only like a part of the game. It's not all the game because the players still have to make shots, do things.
I don't think the NBA, you know, some people go as far as say the NBA is rigged. I do think.
No way.
I will turn on my conspiracy hat and say that they do sometimes.
But the refs make money.
The players still have to make the shots. Things still have to happen.
Yep.
It's not, you know, wrestling. But the NBA sometimes likes to tip one side over the other.
Yeah, I don't agree because when we start doing that, we start taking away the absolute skill of these superheroes on the court.
In theory, yes. At the end of the day, it's an entertainment product.
Yes. Yep. I can't deny
that. I don't think that the NBA themselves go to the refs and say, hey, do this, do that. I think it's just the refs and the betting. I think it's the betting. All
right.
I think it's the betting. Because guess what? All the ex-players are talking about it.
Yes, they are.
Rasheed Wallace is talking about it. He ain't no bullshitter.
No, it's
Gilbert
not,
Arenas is talking about I'll, it. He's no
give,
bullshitter.
I'll give two.
Players are the ones that are saying it. If ex-players are saying it, yeah. Kenyon Martin is saying it,
might be something to it.
I'll give two examples. One, look, Jokic is about to win his third MVP, right?
Well, didn't he already win?
I'm talking about at game two. Okay. Jokic is about to win his third MVP.
Oh, yeah,
game
two.
The league knew that. They were suddenly getting their ass kicked. It looked like the series was over. And then Mike Malone literally bum rushes a ref, has to be held back.
Oh, the heat pack shit. Yeah, yeah.
Not even a technical. Not even a technical.
Oh, no. He straight up said to him, you're going to stay here and get this ass whooping, is what they said to him. Like, they went to the ref's mouth. They saw what the ref said. The ref said, I'm not going to kick you out. You're going to take this ass whooping. You're not going to the locker room. That's what happened with that.
Even the commentators were sitting there like, oh, this guy's going to get ejected. And then they're like, no. Not even a technical.
No.
Not even a technical.
No. He said, you're going to take this ass whooping. Like, that's what that one was.
Then Jamal throws multiple objects on the court, makes a money symbol, basically calling the refs sold out.
Yeah.
Right? All this shit. No suspension.
As far as the MVP suspension. Stuff.
He only even got after the fact technical.
He got fined.
After the fact technical.
That's about it.
I mean, he didn't even get the minus 1 point in game.
Yeah.
As far as the MVP talk, that we believe Warriors won, Dirk won MVP. I mean, they still whooped his ass, and like, they knew he was going to win the MVP. And like,
that's why I'm saying I don't think it's outright rigged.
No, it's not.
I don't think it's outright rigged.
Not the NBA itself, but the refs.
I do think there are situations where the NBA has a chance to suspend someone or has these 50-50 calls where they're like,
Stoudemire with the Suns, with who else? Was it Boris Diaw? It was Stoudemire and Boris Diaw, wasn't it?
If you go to Suns forums, they still talk about how Tim Duncan also got up off the bench, but he didn't get suspended.
No.
Draymond still talks about getting suspended in that finals.
They would have lost. Everybody talks about that game. They would have lost that game.
Draymond dug himself a hole deep enough that he could anything. If he sneezed the wrong way, they're gonna kick him.
They were completely destroying the Cavaliers up to that point. It wasn't a competitive series at all.
And right before we start to finish the conversation, my favorite team is probably the 2016 Cavs. That's probably my favorite team.
It's not just because they
won the chip. For me, was Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson. I fucking love those two.
And also, what's his name? Oh, no.
Kevin Love.
Not Kevin Love. The other, the guy that messed up at the end.
J.R. Smith?
J.R. Smith. Love J.R. My favorite J.R. Smith is still New York Knicks J.R. Smith. Because I just love
goofy
watching
motherfucker,
him,
dude.
But yes,
he was such a fucking child.
I'll stick by love him. That without the suspension, Warriors would have won in five, and nobody would remember.
Disagree.
Who knows? But guys,
it was not a competitive series. Warriors had won by an average of 30 points in their three wins. It was not a competitive
series.
Well,
in all the games, actually, they were blowing each other out. Because they blew each other out until game seven.
It was 3-1. And, I mean, again, it's obviously a hypothetical.
Yeah, no, but
it's obviously a hypothetical.
But I'm on the opposite side of it.
Yeah,
sure. I'm on the opposite side of it.
I mean, again, it's a hypothetical. They were a 73-win team that had been way better up to that point and suddenly had a player unfairly suspended.
Yeah,
I mean, that's all I need to say.
Yeah,
they were up 3-1, were completely destroying them, and suddenly had their second best player suspended.
Game seven at home. Draymond was back. He had a triple double.
Let's forget that he was back.
Yeah,
that's fair.
And he was
That's fair. But I mean, if LeBron had gone suspended for some bullshit, I guarantee we would never have heard the end of it.
Of course not.
That was a bullshit suspension. Yeah. Is my thing. If it was a real suspension, fine.
That one was a suspension off the technical, not so much.
No,
he was suspended because he had accumulated his technicals.
No, it was flagrant. And here's the thing.
No.
It was flagrant fouls. Foul.
It was the accumulation of the flagrant fouls.
Yes, but
here's
the thing, Ollie. All right, I'm going to walk you through this. LeBron steps over Draymond.
Yeah.
Shamelessly. It's not like there was like... Iverson steps over Draymond.
Iverson steps over him, basically. Yeah.
Draymond's reaction, which is the very instinctive natural reaction, is to throw his hand up and try to get LeBron out the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't call a foul. LeBron, who is the guy who tends to complain for fouls, does not even once look at the refs being like, where's the foul?
No.
They don't stop and look at it.
Oh, he gaslighted them for sure.
They don't they don't call a technical.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
They don't do anything in the time. Yeah. Nobody thinks to stop. And then after the fact, when the Cavaliers are down 3-1, when their big series of the year looks like it's going to be a blowout and a joke. Oh, actually, no, that's a flagrant, guys.
Yeah.
Worst call I've ever seen in my life.
I see what you mean, but I just disagree. But I see what you mean.
Disagree it was a bad call?
No, it was, but like I don't think it was so egregious that like it changed the because Draymond did come back. Like they were
up until the fourth quarter of game five. It's not like the Cavaliers blew them out game five. It's hypotheticals. I mean, they're not going to be able to, prove this.
Nice.
But I don't think there's a clear cut. I mean, Warriors had been the better team easily up to that point.
Yeah, they were the better team. Yeah.
And Draymond Green was their second best player. It's not like they lost.
The better team won.
Again, we'll agree to disagree on that. But
I guess that going
when you get a free suspension to the second best player on the other team, it adds a little bit of an asterisk.
I see. I guess we have to rapid fire this part. So favorite basketball movies. There have been a bunch of movies throughout the year since, you know, we have to wrap this into pop culture movies somehow. So I'm going to rattle off some basketball movies that, you know, I've loved, hope you guys love, and just see which ones you ride or die or by yourself. So Love and Basketball. Y'all seen that one?
No. Actually, I don't know.
Love and Basketball.
You know what? Let's just cut some of your favorite movies, man. You know what?
Okay.
Because it was your favorite basketball
movie. My favorite basketball movie, it's a tough one. It's really a tough one, but I think it might be Coach Carter.
That's a great one.
With Sam Jackson.
I think I would agree with you.
It's a generic basketball hood movie where you combine like Lean on Me but with basketball.
I think so, I agree with you.
It's one of those where it kind of hits all the marks. It's kind of like the mac and cheese or the box mac and cheese.
And it's a fun watch. Movies. It's a fun, watchable movie too. It's entertaining.
It reminds me
a lot of those like Step Up and like all like those other inner city school like
generic hood movie.
Yeah, generic hood. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah. It was elevated by Sam Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Aldi?
I'm on the same boat with him, but like if I were to pick like another one, I would probably go Space Jam. I mean, I grew up with that. That's it was Bugs Bunny.
That was up there for me.
And Why Men Can Jump. That was also one of my favorite movies. Yeah.
Man, I'm going to throw you off for a curveball here. I don't even know if it's quite my favorite. It might be Coach Carter. It might be another one, but Flubber.
What's Flubber?
Flubber did have basketball. So Robin Williams, it's a Disney remake of
a little green jello thing.
Green
gooey.
Oh, I remember this. I remember that movie.
And he put him on the bottom of the player's shoes to make him an umpire.
He invents a little comedic
flubber. I see where you went with
that. And then they take that chemical that created him and put it on the, you know, when they jump into the, like jumping, and then the ref goes like, there ain't nothing in the rule book about jumping too high.
And they put Flubber on their hands and they bounce the ball like freaking.
You know, I love how multiple movies, kids' movies involving basketball in that time period, because Air Bud had the same thing.
Air Bud?
Yeah, yep. Where it's like the ref's just sitting there being like, well, there's no clear cut rule against this. I mean, they're obviously cheating, but there is not explicit rule saying a golden retriever cannot be on the court. So I guess we're allowing this.
Yeah. How would you feel if a dog on the other team just waved you off and just went to the line? That's what happened in Air Bud.
Bro, Air Bud has one strong similarity with Stuart Little in that imagine being the kids. I have to imagine being the kids who lost to a golden retriever at basketball has to feel similarly to being the orphans who lost out to a mice for parents. A mouse, a talking mouse, yo.
He's too little.
But that's why he got adopted, because he can talk. Juan, come on, bro.
Bro, I don't care how eloquent that fucking mouse is. If I'm going into an adoption agency, I'm going in for a flesh and blood human.
But honey,
you know, that
talks.
Is 100%
on God.
My plan. And these motherfuckers were like, no, you know what? These orphans suck. I'm going to take this mouse. You know, these kids are so shit, I'm going to take this mouse. That's how I feel about Air Bud. There was a starting five of human beings who could jump, who could take jump shots, and they lost to a dog, bro.
Imagine being the guy that gets subbed out for Bud. You know, man, as a parent, I'd be like, "Yo, man, my boy."
That's a good. That's a good point. That's a good shout out, Cozy. I did not. So I don't true. Even think about that. That's I will. So I will counter. I will counter. Bro, if I was on a team that played basketball with the dog, I'd be like, "Hey, coach, put me in on some minutes, but let's get this dog in there. Let's get this dog in there. You know, I'd want to see. I'd want to root for the dog.
Air Bud was
jumping the dog's face.
He was a sharpshooter from the 3-point. Nah, man, he was
taking free throws. He was
drawing fouls. Look, man, you laugh, Ollie, but Air Bud can shake you.
No. I remember.
Okay, so just, again, rapid fire. Who's been like your favorite basketball player performance in like a movie? I have mine already.
Oh, obviously Shaq Kazam. Obviously, right? No, I'm kidding. Exactly. I'm kidding. I don't think that's anybody's favorite performance. Probably KG and Uncut Gems.
You stole mine, but yeah, Kevin Garnett and Uncut Gems is a revelation.
I'm not even entirely sure if that's not the objective correct choice.
No, it's a correct choice. Kevin Garnett was so good in Uncut Gems that playing himself, by the way.
Playing himself. He was not acting. Michael Jordan played himself. He didn't need to act.
He's just himself.
Michael Jordan played. Like, Michael Jordan and LeBron played themselves, and you could tell there was an issue there. KG played himself, but he did a good job of it.
It was a heightened version.
He was a heavy supporting character.
One is for kids, and the other one is a rated R movie.
True.
That's the other difference, where you can't really truly be yourself. You got to be there, try to act for the kids.
Yes, but it's still...
Because LeBron was pretty good in Trainwreck.
He's amazing.
Right? He was really good in Trainwreck.
He was pretty good in Trainwreck. But even that's a comedy, like a silly comedy. He was terrible.
The movie itself was meh. But he was actually the highlight.
He was memorable.
He was actually the highlight. But yeah. I would probably pick Ray Allen.
He got game.
Jesus Shuttlesworth, baby.
Yeah, man.
It's not a bad pick at all.
All right, guys. Dude, sports ball talk. So I guess what we're going to do next is we're going to go into the plug of the week, guys. That's a part where we share something we're either watching, reviewing, or enjoying. That's...
I'm so sorry. I forgot that Kareem was an airplane. You know what? I'm going to be Kareem.
Oh, my God. I wrote that down and forgot.
You know what? It's Kareem.
Thank you.
You know what?
Thank you for saying that.
It's not Ray Allen.
Thank you for saying
Kareem.
That.
It's Kareem.
What was the line where he shits talked the little kid?
He
was
like,
man, you tell your dad to have Laimbeer and Mikhail Riley on him for 82 games to see how he plays.
That's Kareem.
That was a script. He was like, man, shut up, little boy.
And he got beat up by Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee killed him.
He did get beat the shit out of him by Bruce Lee.
Yeah, Kareem. Yeah, I'm gonna change. Yeah,
that's a good answer.
You win, Ollie.
Yeah.
But okay. But
the that might be over KG.
But all right. So what y'all have for your plug of the week? Who wants to go first?
Ollie, you want to go first?
No, you guys go. Then I'll go.
I go first. I'm gonna plug the show, Disney Plus show, X-Men 97. X-Men 97 is
Aaron has been talking about that.
It's great. Yes, our friend of the show Aaron has loved it. I've been loving this whole show. It had its final episode today. What else can I say? It's just an amazing show. It's a continuation of the 90s X-Men show. Don't want to spoil it for anyone out there, but it's a fantastic way to set up a season 2, which is definitely going to come. So X-Men 97, check it out on Disney Plus today.
So for my plug of the week, I'm going to plug Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Okay. It's a sitcom. It's actually been off the air a few years now.
On Peacock now.
Mm. It's on Peacock. You can actually watch the first 4 seasons on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
But you can only watch the full show on Peacock.
It's a great fucking show.
It's an amazing show. It's a standard kind of... You know, silly sitcom, right? A silly workplace sitcom. But I think it's elevated by the fact that the cast, one, it's a very unique cast. I mean, you know, obviously diversity doesn't necessarily make or break a show. But, you know, the cast have talked about it. They had an openly gay black captain. They had two Latina women on the show. They had all this variety. Terry Crews being a big, scary black dude.
All about the yogurt.
That instead plays like the biggest, like, goofy softy and family man, you know, give a different, you know, he's still big and jacked and they play on that, but they also make him a kind of a goofy character. So yeah, no, it's a real fun show, real good time. Definitely recommend for the nostalgic vibe.
Oh man, I got a lot of things, but I guess if I was to aim at the most recent thing, I think Big T told me about it. Kaiju number 8. It's like an anime show.
Kaiju number 8. Okay.
The interesting about it is that the main guy who plays in there is not like a 15-year-old kid. It's a 35-year-old man who's failed in life.
Okay.
And is trying to succeed, essentially. And it starts out as a Godzilla essentially gets destroyed, essentially, because it's just like a world that has like a bunch of
kaijus
in it. Mm-hmm. And our guy goes in there as a guy to clean up the mess that the humans made after they destroyed the Godzilla. But he's also aspiring to be part of the team who killed these big-ass monsters. And at the end of the episode, a small monster goes into his mouth and he also becomes a monster. And that's literally how the first episode starts, and it's awesome.
Where can people find this at?
Crunchyroll. And it's already dubbed too at the same time, so I think it's on its fifth episode now. And Big T was the one who told me to watch it. Tristan, I hope you guys have in the show.
I hope we can get him.
Yeah, but he was the one that told me about it, so I would say that and Blue Eyed Samurai.
All right.
Yeah, it's a good show. We've already plugged it on.
Nah, but
all right, good.
Earlier episode. We'll plug it again. All right, dude. Ali, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
This is awesome.
Thank you for so much
awesome
for being
stuff
here.
Yeah,
man. Yeah.
And thank you to the audience for being a little patient with us while we do a little little bit of a sports ball segment. Get a different segment of the pop culture talking about.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate that. But again, guys, thank you so much for listening. This has been It Was Mooney. Again, you can find us. Please like and subscribe to us on Spotify. Search the name It Was Mooney on Spotify. But thank you guys for showing up today. And again, I'm Kosi. And until next time, guys, bye-bye.
Hey, Miner.
Adios.